maybe around 2:33 a.m. found me in the street and were just curious as to what the hell, who is this woman and why is she lying here?
Julia, Kwamya, and I have known each other for over a decade. We met when I was in grad school in New York, and Julia was working at a bar nearby. She was, and is, an actor and musician. And in 2011, when we met, she was working in the service industry to make ends meet. We lost touch, but followed each other on Instagram, so I knew she was getting traction in her music career.
In 2017, I'd gone on an international tour with this band called The Radio Department, Swedish band. But that tour was the greatest experience of my life. And so imagine coming back from the greatest experience of your life and going back to work in a restaurant. Like, you know, if I had a chip on my shoulder before about going to college and studying economics, I had an even bigger one because I was able to do what I actually want to do with my life. And but I knew I was just like in a very like dark place, and I started to make moves, and and I think I just started applying for like whatever sort of jobs that, like, having not worked in any sort of office setting since I graduated university, it was harder for me to kind of find my entry point. And I got hired at this advertising agency called Giant Spoon to be their office manager, support the EA. I also had another offer to, I think, support some fashion person, and they're going to pay me like way more money than like Giant Spoon was offering, but Giant Spoon had health insurance, so.
So Julia took the job with a lower paycheck and health insurance. She was in a routine with steady income and had no reason to believe Saturday, January 12th, 2019, would be any different than any other Saturday.
It was just another like weekend. Like, I had planned to have brunch with my friend Marina, who I hadn't seen in 1,000 years. And then after that, I had my French class, which was in Queens, and received a text from a friend that they were having their going away party. And I just, like, I completely forgot about it, to be honest. I just completely forgot. I decided to go to the party, and I ended up seeing a bunch of old friends that I hadn't seen in a while, and it was, like, lovely and joyous, and, like, a good night, you know? I decided that I didn't want to take the train home. I'm going to take a cab. You know, living the luxe life at a new advertising job, which wasn't luxe, but, you know, I felt like it.
The party was in the Meatpacking District of New York City, and Julia was going to her apartment in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, a trip that would cost around $40, depending on traffic. It was around 12:30 or 1 a.m. when they got to Julia's apartment.
I'm about to pay, and I'm attempting to swipe my card, and he's like, no, I want cash. I'm like, well, I don't have cash. I have a card. So I swipe my card, and it declines. And you know that trepidation of when your card's declining. You're like, what the hell? Like, I have money, or I thought I did. And so I check my little Chase app, and I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I just got paid, so I do have money. And I swipe again. Still declines. Swipe a different card. That declines, too. And at this point, I'm trying to, like, show him and prove to him that, like, hey, I got, look at my, look at the little
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I'm not like, trying to, like, yeah. scam you out of a cab right here. Like, yeah. I'm trying to pay you. It's just not yeah. letting me.
Yeah, like, we can go to the bank. We can do whatever. I can pull it out for you.
As Julia was swiping through her cards, the cab door was open. And even though Julia was very willing to go get cash out from an ATM to pay for the ride, the driver made a different decision.
And, you know, at that moment, I guess it was advantageous for him to go 0 to 100 with the sliding door of the cab open. And I fell out.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. The sudden increase in speed threw Julia from the cab. She doesn't remember anything, but has seen video from a security camera on the street.
What was it like seeing that for the first time?
Awful. Awful. Just the speed of it all, the quickness of it all, the sort of agony of anything like that happening to anybody, you know? Like the trepidation, you know? Like, maybe I didn't even have time to feel any fear because it literally was so quick.
The fall knocked her unconscious, and the cab driver sped away. Julia was left lying there in the street, knocked out.
I am imagining there that I was there for like maybe an hour or two, because I think someone was driving home from somewhere in the neighborhood, and maybe around 2:33 a.m. found me in the street, and were just curious as to what the hell, who's this woman, and why is she lying here, and thankfully called the cops, who came and took me to New York Presbyterian.
Julia was in a coma for 7 days.
Do you remember feeling your body when you were in the coma at all?
Well, that is a great question. No, I remember feeling just very warm, because like I said, I felt like I was in a very comfortable bed, a very comfortable sleep, a very comfortable repose, I suppose. I mean, thank God for drugs, but like, you know, I had no real idea of what was going on, except for subconsciously, I think, because there's an element where I just kept thinking I was watching like a TV show, like the best TV show ever, but the main character just kept dying, you know, and in this show, it was just like so annoying that she was doing this. So then for whatever reason, I decided to jump into the television set and save her, you know, and over and over again, I would do this until, at some point, she was like, you need to stop and go live your own life. And again, I'm watching the show. I see her do the same mistakes. So I jump in the show again. But instead, she pushes me off a cliff. And, you know, in my visual, I sort of have it. It's like I'm somehow out of the ocean. But I have all this, like, you know, it's the ocean, so there's probably plastic, all this stuff that's just on me, and I bring myself to shore. This, to me, feels like my experience of, like, this coma. I don't think every day I was like, oh, wow, let's make it, you know? I don't think every day I was like, oh, I've got to pull myself out of this, and I think I needed to subconsciously save myself and really, like, push myself off the ledge to just come out of this thing.
What is your first recollection after, like, waking up?
Well, I do remember the first thought I had to myself was like, God, I have to finish my record, because I was in the process of doing that. That's all I cared about.
But waking up was also extremely disorienting.
Waking up and not knowing where I was, right? I mean, and all these wires and things strapped to me. I think at the time I woke up, I was an MRI machine. So I'm looking at this vehicle around me and just like, so I tried to escape because naturally, that's just my fight or flight or both, you know, all of it. Yeah, in terms of realizing what was really going down, I was able to see things. So I could see I was in this ICU. I could see people around me crying. You know, I could see doctors sort of like freaking out when anything would beep, and I could just see the chaos, and I could see myself being in the middle of it. No one's trying to sort of ruffle any feathers while you're in that state either. So I don't think anyone was like, obviously, like, oh, hey, Julia, you know what happened to you? Like,
so it wasn't hard for Julia to figure out her most intense injury.
I knew my foot, my right foot was essentially severed. Like, that's just, it is what it is. Like, you know, and I know that was their main concern. The hospital's main concern was like getting the right plastic surgeon to really come in and like do aggressive work to connect the nerves that were severed down there and get things back to basics. And I know I did not feel this because they hooked it up with a ton of fentanyl. And if I had felt this, I don't know that I would mentally be okay.
But they obviously couldn't keep her on fentanyl forever.
What I did start to feel was, you know, when they take you off fentanyl and they downgrade you to morphine and you're like, oh, this is not as good. And then they do an even worse thing and they downgrade you from morphine to Tylenol, thinking that's going to do anything. And you're like, oh my God. Oh my God, kill me. Like, what? What is this, you know? And so you do start to feel things and you start to realize that your body is slightly atrophying because you're just lying in a bed.
As Julia could feel more and more of her body, she became aware of an injury the doctors had missed.
But I think very soon on, when everyone was sort of calming down about my foot, I started to realize that I could not feel my arm. And it wasn't because of drugs. It wasn't because of any of that stuff. It was just I could not feel it. It was not moving. I, of course, wasn't conscious that it wasn't moving because I'm just lying in a bed, so everything sort of was the same. But I kept telling people, I'm like, hey, this shouldn't be, why is my arm not moving, you know? And no one had an answer. They all thought it was just going to come back, or there was no real deep sea dive into it. And I just kept persisting and saying like, listen, my arm's not moving. Like, how do we fix this? What needs to happen?
Julia had to keep advocating for herself, even with the weight of healing already on her.
Yeah, it sucks, but at the same time, no one else is going to do it for you because you're the only one that's lying there that can tell what's happening to you internally, you know, or at least I know I'm in tuned enough to know that something's off. And it's the situation you're in is already stressful. Waking up at 5 for some shot or for someone to draw blood from your arm and, you know, never really sleeping, but like, and constantly wondering when you're going to get out of the bed and wondering if your neighbor next door is going to stop crying and if, you know, if you're in as much pain as they are. Like, you just start playing all these, like, mind games with yourself.
Julia struggled with feeling like this terrible thing that happened to her should be what everyone in her life was focusing on.
Of course, this thing happens to me, right? So I'm like, wow, my life is awful. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. Everyone should feel bad for me because I can't believe I'm in this situation. Why me? What did I do? What do the gods have against me? You know, so everything becomes about you. And I'm already an actor, so like so it's like everything just becomes about you. But then I also realized that I was like, okay, fine, other people have lives. I guess you forget that you're part of their world, that you're not their entire world. And you can't help but feeling that you should be everyone's world because I'm here lying in a bed by myself. Why, you know? And I think like in some ways, because of, you need to have that kind of focus and narcissism on yourself if you're gonna heal. But at the same time, like I did lose friends as a result of that because, you know, it wasn't like they could call me and be like, hey, what's up? What's going on? Oh, yeah, still lying here. The sky's gray. I don't know what it feels like outside. You know, like.
Julia had to go through intense physical therapy for her foot and continued to try to get someone to take her arm injury seriously.
It was really, really, really aggravating. Maybe I'm naive. You know, I've never really been in a hospital for anything serious. So I just assume, like, well, you tell them something's wrong, they're going to fix it, right? not all this, like, third-degree questioning of, like, what's really wrong. Like, everyone's asking you, like, well, are you sure? Are you this? Are you that? It could be this. And I know the man who worked on my foot, the plastic surgeon, Dr. Finney George, I love him, he's focused on my foot, as he should be. Like, that was his main thing. And I needed everyone else to kind of get themselves together to start to deduce what was going on with my arm. And then eventually they moved me to a nursing home. So imagine 33, a nursing home, like my life was made.
As aggravating as she found the constant poking and prodding and waking up at the hospital, the nursing home was worse.
I would just get so angry in the nursing home when some of the nurses were flippant about what time they were going to bring people their medications. And so if you're in a hospital, you're used to it being like regimented on the clock, 5 a.m. And those nurses, I mean, everyone works their ass off if they're doing this kind of stuff, this kind of work, but nursing homes, a little less so. And I get it, people have lives and things like that. But when you're lying in a bed, waiting to not feel the agony of your nerves, like, burning because it's raining outside. Like, literally rain would cause us all to, like writhe in pain. I wasn't willing to sit there and just, and say nothing about it. I was like, you guys need to get on this.
How did you deal with the anger? What did you do with that?
Still dealing with it. Also, I think at that period of time, I think I was like internalizing it for myself. For other people, I was like able to be like, rawr, you know? And when doctors would listen to me, I'd also roar. But like the actual like rage that I was constantly feeling at this entire situation, I think that was actually what was killing me, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I'd survived something to only sort of internally kill myself because I was in denial. I was in a lot of denial. I was in a lot of pain. I was at that point blaming myself too. And I know my mind at that point was just telling me, like, this is awful. Why did you survive this? Like, what is going on? You're never going to heal. Your arm's never going to move. You're never going to walk. Like, all this stuff. I was believing it because I was saying it. So I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to do my occupational therapy because it hurt. I didn't want to use a walker. I didn't want to use a wheelchair because why should I even bother, you know?
Julia needed something. Anything to help with the despair that her life had totally been derailed.
I think it was when my friend Marcia came to the nursing home and she saw that I was in my like dark Scorpio mental state, and she was like, all right, you need to watch this documentary called Healing. And I think that's probably what flipped the switch for me, this documentary, because not only are you listening to people who've gone through something, but it's not the same something. Like, all, it's like whether they had cancer, whether they had a car accident, da da da. But the woman who's sort of leading the documentary is speaking to different people, and how one approaches healing, and what you have to do as the person dealing with the injuries and all this other stuff. Like, it is mental. And I knew that I needed to change my focus and my mentality about whether I was going to heal or not, because that was going to be the difference.
As she was shifting her mindset from feeling completely defeated to being determined to heal, Julia also finally encountered doctors that had answers about her arm.
And I'm doing occupational therapy with them, but these two doctors were just so, like, they'd seen everything. You know, they deal with old people dealing with nerve damage all the time. And so they were the ones that first put me onto the idea of like, you might have a brachial plexus injury.
Julia finally had an answer. According to Johns Hopkins, the brachial plexus is a network of nerves in the shoulder. It carries movement and sensory signals from the spinal cord out to the arms and hands. Julia's injury disrupted these signals, so she lost the use of her arm.
And I had avulsed two spinal cords, like C6 and C7, I believe. And so those two in particular meant that my arm was just shot, you know, like it wasn't connected to anything.
When they told you, we think it's this thing, were you like, how did no one see this before?
Yeah, I mean, I was pissed. And the thing that really made me so angry is that at the nursing home, they told me, you have a window of time to get surgery to get this thing healed. But you can't do the surgery before the 3-month window, and you can't do it after a 6-month window. And I was right there between 3 and 4-ish before anyone really illuminated me to anything. And I think when I was just realizing that, like, being in a nursing home wasn't going to help me get any better, and I checked myself out.
Leaving the nursing home meant she could track down the care she needed for her brachial plexus injury. But it also meant she had to go back home without any nurses or attendants to help her with her daily needs.
I needed to do that so I could get myself together and get what I needed to get to fix the problems that I was having. And so I found another occupational therapist at Hand Therapy, and thank God for her, because she was like, you can't sit around and wait with this. And this is like my second week of seeing her, and she's like, yeah, you need to get this surgery. So she made a call to her friends at HSS.
That's the Hospital for Special Surgeries in New York.
The best in sort of hand, nerve, whatever, surgeries is Dr. Stephen Lee at HSS, and he's the one that literally saw me. He was like, all right, let's do this ASAP. We got it done in June, and thank God, because if it weren't for that surgery, if it weren't for all these people that were, you know, having any sort of vision, forethought, momentum, action, I would have basically an incapable arm.
The police had started investigating what happened to Julia immediately after she was found, and they found the cab driver within days. But with Julia in a coma, they weren't able to interview her. And that interview was key to actually arresting him.
I am a little conflicted with this one, because on one level, that call that my neighbor made to the cops is what saved my life. But it was like everything after the fact that just seems a bit stupid. It's like, you're in this coma or whatever, and so they catch the guy, right? But they let him go because they can't get a word from me about what happened, because guess what? I'm not conscious. And then even after that, it's like, it's not the kind of case that anyone really wanted to deal with. So I feel like I just kept getting just shuffled around in the mix, you know? I get it. There are perhaps worse criminals. And it's hard when you're the only one that's kind of like, hey, let's do something. And everyone's like, okay, well, you know, I got to finish this paperwork and this, that, and the other thing. And are you sure you sent that? Or
you're also dealing with all of your injuries and
injuries, money, you know, people, like losing friends, you know, just everything all at once. So I think I actually just sort of kept my distance from the cops because they were kind of useless to me in a certain way. And what I needed to do was get a really good lawyer, which thank God I went to Pepperdine and have some friends who knew some people. But like, without that lawyer, I wouldn't feel any sort of justice whatsoever for the situation.
What happened to the guy, the driver?
I literally don't know. He never showed up for the deposition, so I literally do not know.
With no resolution in criminal court, Julia sued the cab company and the driver.
That was like another agony of like 2 years preparing the pandemic. So courts were shut down. We're like doing this thing on Zoom.
The driver was supposed to be deposed, but he didn't show up.
And I think one thing I'd been doing, you asked how I deal with my anger. I know immediately after, I just started writing scripts about just contemplating. I was like, well, what happened in his day that led up to this incident, you know? What happened after the fact? What did he do when he went home? You know, like all these questions of like, who, what, when, where, why? And why is the biggest one. I'm like, why?
If he presented himself, would you still want to like hear what he had to say?
I think I would, because I'd be morbidly curious. just for the sake. I think I would. Although another script idea that I had was about, you go through this thing, you're sitting at a bar, you connect with somebody, and somebody that you're sitting next to connecting with is the person that actually hit you with the car. But neither of you know the other person.
All these feelings of unfairness and injustice and exhaustion had to be dealt with. The documentary Healing had gotten her through a moment, but she needed something more intense and personalized to help her sort through her feelings.
I have an EMDR therapist who is amazing. And it's like
eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
EMDR, right. Yeah, EMDR. That's what it is. And I think the thought behind that is that you do these exercises where your therapist can start to sense what's difficult for you based on how quickly or slowly your eyes are moving or when pupils dilate and things like that. And I had started it before the accident and most definitely continued afterwards because I was just a ball of fire all the time, you know? And so really working with my therapist helped me unravel so many things, even things from before the car thing. And I don't know if it weren't for her, I don't know if I'd be as sort of like stable in a certain way. Cause if you're just living with that anger, guilt, blame, all that stuff by yourself, you're just not going to treat yourself very well.
Julia eventually won the lawsuit against the cab company and was awarded a settlement, but she had mixed feelings about it.
There was an element of winning that I was like really happy with. I was like, great, good. But I did have this strange sensation that when I got the cash, I hated it. I hated it. So I almost did everything I could to spend it as quickly as possible. But like getting money in that way was just so disgusting to me. And I'm glad it wasn't more than it was, because if anything, I'm going to create my wealth how I do, not because I was a victim in someone's stupidity.
She used the money to get settled into a new apartment, pay for her living expenses while she was unable to work, a trip to Paris, and some medical bills. But healing is an expensive undertaking.
It's not exactly the best thing to happen to one's finances. Like, I've had 5 different surgeries outside of student loans. There's that hanging over my head in a certain way. There's also, like, financially, you sort of think about, oh, hospital bill. When I was out of the hospital, like, I needed to get to my appointments and by myself. Like, my dad couldn't drive me everywhere anymore, you know? So I'm taking Ubers everywhere. So it's like occupational therapy, physical therapy. If I go to my Body Works lady, who's going to help me like sort myself out? If I do Pilates so I can learn to stand straight again? If I'm doing anything I need to do to reconstruct my soul is a cost. And, you know, I've always said it, but I'm expensive, and even more so now. You know, it's and the thing is, like, the reason I have healed so much is that I've spared no cost. I've just said, all right, fine. If this is going to help me walk better, stand better, move my arm, build the muscles, whatever I need to do, I'm going to do it.
And even with all those costs, her first thought when she woke up from the coma that she needed to finish her album was still there. And she had a responsibility to finish it, not only to herself, but to the backers of a Kickstarter campaign she did before her accident.
I just got really focused, and I knew I needed money to really fulfill the products. Like I said, I was going to make a vinyl and do all that, but I hadn't been able to fulfill it because I'd spent the better part of 2 years just trying to get my arm to move again. So I ended up, you know, getting a bunch of grants from different sources, so like Music Cares, New York Foundation of the Arts. But that was how I was able to sustain myself. And because when you apply for a grant, they make you come up with some sort of outline for a business plan, whether you have it or not. And I was able to see like, okay, this is what I need to actually produce the record. This is what I actually need to, you know, shipping equipment, like mastering, all the kind of pieces that I needed to budget. I was able to do that because they give you some sort of guidance in that way.
Julia released her album, Feel Good About Feeling Bad, in 2021. You're listening to Wonder How off that album, and the rest is available on Spotify and Bandcamp if you want to give it a listen. With that dream fulfilled, she started looking for more steady work, which meant steady income. She was offered a temp position as a receptionist at a finance company. As an actor and musician, a job as a receptionist wasn't where she thought her life was going.
but fine, because I had to remember my values. Why was I taking this job? What did I need to get done? What do I need to do? How many doctor's appointments do I have? Who do I need to see, right? And all this stuff. So I just said, all right, fine, I'll do it. That pivoted into a role as the executive assistant for the CEO, which is cool. Like, he's a great guy, and ultimately ended up putting in my head that maybe I should work with their business development team. And that was a harder pill to swallow for me, because I'm still under the guise of like music and acting are going to be my saviors and take me out of this thing. But at the same time, I do need to take care of myself. I do still live in New York. I do still pay too much money for rent, and it is what it is. And what an interesting journey that I did not even see happening, going from like all the things I've been doing to like working in finance now.
Julia is thriving in this new career and feels supported in her growth there. And she's still working on regaining all the physicality she had before the accident. And then some.
Well, these days I can proudly say that I can lift my arms in the air. I'm still working on like elbow rotation, but that's also connected to somewhere in the shoulder, and that's just a strengthening thing. So once I start to build muscle, I didn't really have too much muscle to begin with, but I'm going to start building muscle so I can really, really get it back 100%. This year I got a bit more proactive and decided to take piano lessons at the top of the year, January, and learn a piece that I stopped playing when I was 12. And then ended up doing my first recital at Steinway Hall, which was really fun. And of course, keeping with my love for insane challenges, I'm motivating myself to train for the New York Marathon, because I don't know if I can run yet. Like, I don't have that flex, but I want to see what is possible, what I can possibly do.
Having been through something that totally derailed her life for so long, Julia knows how hard it is to keep going, but also knows how important it is.
You have this resilience to continue to live, right? Like, I mean, that's even why I'm doing this podcast. Like, there's a part of me that really hates talking about this, but I also know that, you know, people have been inspired, you know, because I've shared it with them. And that's great. You know, that's great. Fine. If it inspires you to get out of bed and do what you need to do, then do that. Because I definitely know, like, many days lay in my bed and I'm just like, this is the worst. You know, I definitely play that game. I think I was even doing it this morning, but you can do that with yourself. But what if you just try to do something else? And it can be hard, but when you actually decide to take the first step, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's possible, but if you don't take that step, you will never know.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul, and you can follow the show on Instagram at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. And check out Julia's album, Feel Good About Feeling Bad, on Spotify and Bandcamp. She also just released her new single, Say Yes, on January 30th. Go check it out. Say it, don't mean it. Say it, don't mean it.